This is the Historians Podcast, and I'm Bob Cudmore. We're joined by Bill Simons, who's a professor of emeritus of history at the State University of New York at Oneonta. And since Kirk Douglas died, he has been kind of paying homage or following the career of the actor Kirk Douglas, who was originally born as Issue Danielovich, who was called in Amsterdam Isidore Dembski, no doubt the most famous Amsterdamian, the most famous native of Amsterdam, at least now. Of course, time keeps changing. You never know what's going to happen. I want to ask you, Bill, what did appeal to you about this? Why did you want to do this?
Well, I've long been interested in Kirk Douglas. I can remember as a boy going in the days when there were big downtown movie theaters, not multiplexes, you know, cut up, but wonderful downtown movie theaters. And I grew up in Greater Boston, and we went to see Spartacus. And, you know, it was a wonderful film, a great epic. And I was struck by Kirk Douglas's intensity, by the story, you know, of slaves, a universal story of fighting for freedom, you know, set in ancient Rome. And also I was interested in the fact to learn, I was surprised, because he certainly deviated from a lot of the stereotypes that were then current, and many of them still survive, about Jews, of what they looked like, of who they were. And even today, outside of Amsterdam, some people are surprised to find out the late Kirk Douglas was Jewish. And then living in Oneonta, you know, and I would drive by frequently, you know, the exit to Amsterdam, and took some trips up there, and I became, you know, aware of your work. I know you've written so many columns, and I listened to your wonderful interview that I believe you did back in 1985 when there was Kirk Douglas Day. And you know, out of that, you and I had some conversations, and actually, at one point, you graciously invited me to, you know, come to your house. You opened up some doors and introduced me, for example, to John Naple. And out of that, I've made a number of trips. And if you want, I can talk about, you know, some of the places I've been in Amsterdam. And the more you invest in something, the more interesting it becomes. And also the death of Kirk Douglas in 2000 was kind of a milestone. I remember somebody said at the time, "I'm shocked." Well, I thought, how can you be shocked a 103-year-old man has died? And the response was, "I thought he'd live forever." And to some people, so they seemed.
Now, he died in 2020.
I'm sorry, in 2020, correct. Yeah.
Right.
And in 20.
At the age of 103, I mean,
right.
It was really something. There were several other long-lived people from Amsterdam or from anywhere. But the thing I really wanted to get out, make sure we get into the interview with Bill Simons, is as far as I know, and you say I've been following Kirk Douglas as a story from my hometown, but I've never had the guts or the courage to go up and knock on the door at 46 Eagle Street where he was born. But you did that. You went there.
I did, and I kind of built up to it. Well, the key to that is, again, you were so gracious introducing me to wonderful old couple, John and Linda Naple. Really, you know, great folks who've done so much, you know, in the community and had long careers as educators. But I kind of built up to going to the house at 46 Eagle Street. Well, one, I'd gone to Eagle Street a number of times. You know, as you know, of course, and you've written about it, there is a plaque at where Eagle Street intersects Main Street, indicating that at 46 Eagle Street, that's Kirk Douglas's boyhood home. So I had made a number of trips to Eagle Street and walked by it, but not thinking, I mean, it's not a historic site. Somebody lives there. And so, you know, a private residence, and respected that. But I did walk the street many of time. I think it takes me something like 10, 12 minutes, depending on how walking, to go from Eagle and Main, where it begins, to 46 Eagle, which is actually the last structure on the street. But building up to that, you know, I met a number of people. I also had gone to other places that maybe not everyone goes to. And although you were a big help in that, his mother and father are not buried together for reasons we can talk about if you wanted to. But as you remember, of course, the dad is buried in Harry, his father, is buried in Conesville in a small Jewish cemetery. I went to Harry's.
It's Cranesville.
Cranesville. It's a rather small cemetery and kind of out of the way. And then went to the big cemetery where a number of Jewish synagogues have their own plots, which is right off of Route 20. And I went to the grave of his mother. I actually went to his teacher, the teacher who may have the most influence on him, Louise Livingston, on Mohawk. And I stood on the porch, and I thought of the various things that happened in there. She had a great influence on him, on theater, on reading, self-confidence, and also, according to his biography, of initiating him into intimate matters between a man and a woman.
Well, I'll say this, that when his book came out, Ragman's Son, that was the most controversial part of the book in terms of the reaction in Amsterdam. I mean, the fact some people faulted him for saying Amsterdam was anti-Semitic. Well, you know, it was. And, you know, so that wasn't the big thing, but that he sort of talked about how he and Mrs. Livingston had relations, if you will, really frosted a lot of people. But of course, by now, I suppose it's just that time has gone on. All of the participants in this drama are long gone, and I don't know if the word is forgiven. And Kirk Douglas, supposedly late in his life, asked to be forgiven, but I think he's more popular now than he was then.
I think so. There's certainly a good deal of outrage. I spoke also to a young reporter who you probably crossed paths with back in the day, although he was in Amsterdam for a limited period of time, but David Avitable. And David interviewed Kirk Douglas after the publication of the book, which I think was 3 years after the radio interview you did on Kirk Douglas Day. And but you know, long roundabout way to how I came to feel like I'd go to the house. Well, John Napel, who, like your grandfather, John Napel, of course, of your generation and my generation, not of your grandfather's generation, but John Napel, he and his family had lived, as you know, on Eagle Street. And he said, you know, I know Eddie. I'm not going to try to pronounce Eddie's last name because I'll mangle it. But Eddie, my friend, who is an engineer at General Electric and who's retired, I'll ask Eddie, you know, if you could go in, tell him why. I've actually now done eight, you know, articles because, you know, in some years I've done multiple articles as part of the observance, you know, on successive weeks. So I've done eight now, and John came to know of my work, and he's very helpful, as you know. And he said, you know, you've got a real interest in this. I'll explain to Eddie, you know, that, gee, at the Ellsworth, I went through every student newspaper, published, and read them while during the period Izzy was in high school.
That was the Elwood Museum.
The Elwood Museum. And Ann, the director, was so helpful. I went through the yearbooks. So I went through every single copy of the newspaper. And I think that the student newspaper published during the years, as he was in high school. And John said, I'll ask Eddie if you can go in the house. And he granted permission. And it was wonderful. I mean, the house, as you know, has been renovated. It's not going into the same house. But there's something, I think there's a reason we go to homes, whether of former presidents or of authors or of our own boyhood homes or girlhood homes. There's something about the energy, the place, the physicality, even despite the changes, that I think brings alive the past. So it's through John Naples' intercession with the current occupant of the house, who has lived there, you know, for many years, and his family lived there. That's how I came to go into the house, and it was, for me, you know, just added an emotional engagement that made it easier to write and to go back and look at some of the materials. I could see the barn in mind's eye where the horse had been burned, his best friend, Bill.
Bill the horse, yes.
Bill the horse, yeah. And so that's how I came to go into the house. And well, I think it added an emotional engagement to my writing by doing so.
Well, I had participated in co-producing a documentary about Amsterdam, of which the Kirk Douglas story was an important part. It was back in 1999. And I did, you know, what they call in the trade a stand-up in front of the house, but I never went in the house. As far as I know, they didn't know we were there, even. You know. Kirk Douglas's house is the kind of place where, you know, a car will, like, just pull up in a given afternoon. Somebody gets out, and they snap pictures, and then they leave because they're fans of Kirk Douglas, and they found out this was the house he grew up in.
It is, but, you know, being there, and, of course, your grandfather lived on that street.
Yeah, I should explain that a little bit. My family, my grandfather, lived three doors away from the Dembskis, as the Kirk Douglas's family was known. And John Naples, who he referred to, his family lived across the street.
Well, you know, and it's amazing, the whole past, you know, somebody once wrote, I'm a historian, and the past isn't dead. The past isn't even past.
Right.
And when John and I, and I've been on that street, again, a number of times, so the only time I've been in the house, and that was really a culmination of things. And I hope to return to Amsterdam. I've been to the high school, you know, as I said, to Mrs. Livingston's, you know, home, to Kirk Douglas Park, you know, to various places in Amsterdam, trying to conjure up what it was like before the arterials and when it was rug town. And I can see in mind's eye, partly through reading, partly through descriptions, one of John's older cousins has memories of Harry, Kirk Douglas's father, with a wagon, yelling out rags, scrap. And and then we went around the corner, and as you know, the bar where your grandfather may have occasionally gone to, but where Harry, you know, went, it's gone, but we could, you know, I could picture it. And we went where the rooming house, where after the divorce between Izzy's parents, Kirk Douglas's parents, where Harry lived. And so I think those things enable you, going to actual physical sites, to conjure up a time and place.
Well, that bar was O'Shaughnessy's Saloon. At some point, they changed the name to Shaughnessy's Saloon. And yes, my grandfather drank rather heavily, and he, along with Harry Dembski, would hang out at Shaughnessy's Saloon. The one iconic story, don't really know if it's true, is that one time when my grandfather usually would be drinking at Shaughnessy's, he's walking down Eagle Street. And they said, what's the matter? His name was Harry also. What's the matter, Harry? And he said, well, somebody said something about the Jews, and Harry Dembski's cleaned the place out.
He was apparently a brawler, you know, from what I've read. That's a, you know, great story, and Kirk Douglas seemed to take some, again, his relationship with his father, as you know, was not good. There was a distance. He never really got his father's approval. Even when he became a movie star, there was an emotional distance. And yet, on the other hand, even though he loved his mother and came in time to appreciate his sisters, he wanted to go out with his father. His father didn't want him really on that horse-drawn wagon. Certainly right. Didn't want him in the bar. But that house was kind of suffocating. Think of it. Some of us have sisters, but have six sisters and your mother and this one boy there. He felt kind of emotionally suffocated and I think driven. He, you know, in the movie Champion, the really breakthrough movie where Kirk Douglas plays a boxer, in Champion, the character, protagonist, played by Kirk Douglas, references that he grew up on Eagle Street.
And he says 46 Eagle Street.
Oh, wow. He nails it, huh? He nails it.
Yeah.
He wanted to escape it, but it was part of him. And, you know, when I think, you know, the great interview you did in 1985 on Kirk Douglas Day, and what a day. I think there were 28,000 people or so, which probably equaled or maybe surpassed the population of Amsterdam at the time. And just the incredible energy. And then when he spotted his... the friends of his youth, Peter and Wolfie and Sonia. It's just such a wonderful feeling, and you capture that, you know, in the interview. And again, what an event. The governor of the state was there to honor him, and just a tremendous. But then soon, within 3 years, as you said, there was a counter-reaction where the mayor said he regretted honoring him because of Kirk Douglas's, I think, honest claims that there was anti-Semitism when he grew up, and also his admission that he had a relationship with Louise Livingston, who was, by all accounts, an excellent teacher, and by Kirk Douglas's account in his autobiography, she initiated the relationship. But so as you said, the wonderful day in 1985, and then there was a negative reaction by some. A lot of it, I think, is healed. Most of it is healed, but there was, for a period of time, a negative backlash at those revelations and his first autobiography.
We're talking with Bill Simons, who has paid tribute to Kirk Douglas in the 4 years since he died. Kirk Douglas died. I wanted to bring up one other person who... doesn't get a lot of credit, but you give him a credit in this article you have in the in print at this time, and that's my old friend and constant, shall I say, instigator or source for historical information of a certain kind, and that's a man who still lives on Eagle Street, Emil Suda.
And oh, what a remarkable guy.
You got to meet Emil.
To meet Emil. It was by chance, and I think I even remember what number. Does he live on 29 Eagle Street?
Yes, he does.
You know, as I say, after I had gone in the house into the boyhood
46.
Home, 46, John and I slowly walked the street, and I was really kind of amazed because it's been years, obviously, since John's family lived there. The number of people that we encountered that he had some sort of tie with, or just simply said, hey, he used to live here. We walked up there, and Emil, the first thing I noticed about Emil is, one, is he was eager to tell me about Kirk, and I've seen so many of Kirk Douglas's films and written about, you know, numbers of them, but I've never met anybody who had the knowledge of the plots, of the characters, of so many of Kirk Douglas's films, and an enthusiasm about them. So it was fairly evident that enthusiasm had something to do with a common connection they shared, and that being Eagle Street. But Emil is just a wealth of knowledge and enthusiasm and information. Even the dialogue, my gosh, he had some of the dialogue verbatim down.
I'm sure.
Amazing, amazing. And he then accompanied us the rest of the walk when we turned left, and, you know, the former site of where Harry stayed in the boarding home and O'Shaughnessy's.
Well, two things. Well, but I guess there will be one thing, depending on how long we talk about it. You talk to people in Amsterdam, or some, and they're very depressed about how Eagle Street looks these days. But I must say the Kirk Douglas house looks pretty good. Emil's house, okay.
Well, If I might, I didn't mean to interrupt, but did you want me to respond to that?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I mean, it's quite a discrepancy between the way the house is described in Kirk Douglas's autobiographical writing, and also when he was 92, he did a remarkable one-man show. I mean, just physically, the energy, you know, that he had in this, and it's available. It's the title is Before I Forget, and it's a wonderful one-man show. In any case, that he describes this as very dire and cramped and small, and where they used to use, Bill had multiple uses beyond pulling the rag man's wagon. They used Bill's manure in the winter as insulation. Mm-hmm. And so it's almost a Dickensian description of that house. The house is one significantly bigger than one would have imagined from the autobiographical accounts by Kirk Douglas. And it's nice, but Eddie explained there's been significant renovation. So it's not so much that the house today, which I would agree, you know, Bob, the house today looks a pretty solid house. You know, I think also the way that Harry didn't have a lot of money and spent a good deal of that money on drinking and going out to the bars. When Harry, the father, Kirk Douglas's father, was in that house on 46 Eagle Street, before he went out at night, he would literally be pacing, you know, to the point where he could get out of that house. Kirk Douglas had very few memories of his father and mother actually speaking. He said, the only absolute proof I have that they really talked was that there were seven children. Yeah, the house is in a lot better shape, but I can imagine it as it was, a smaller structure before the renovations. You know, it looks like, Eddie does a lot in terms of the upkeep. I think that was not, so it was a different pre-renovation, and also that barn and the horse out back. And I think you have to use some imagination to peel back the layers of the past, mm-hmm. see the house as it is described during the Great Depression, as it compared to the solid house that it is today.
One other story I wanted to bring up with you, and we talked about it at the beginning, was the various names of Isidore Danielovich, Isidore Dembski, Kirk Douglas. I believe, I think I've hit a column on this, and I hope I'm right, that he found the name Kirk Douglas from the gentleman who was Michael Douglas's mentor in the streets of San Francisco. And who would that be? That's
Carl Malden.
Carl
his
Malden.
Great friend, Carl
right.
Malden.
See, they were both in summer stock up in the Adirondacks together. And it was, at the time, Izzy Dembski, and whatever Carl Malden's name was, he changed his name. And apparently he was the one that really pushed Izzy. You got to change your name.
Well, it's hard to imagine on a big New York City theater in the days of the classic downtown theaters, Spartacus starring Isidore or starring Isidore. That's what actors did in those days. Tony Curtis was Bernard Schwartz. Rock Hudson was Roy Fitzgerald. And particularly in the case of, you know, people like Carl Malden or Kirk Douglas, who had ethnic, you know, non-Anglo types of names, that's what actors did in those days. But I think that quest for identity was a major part, and of course I know you've written about it, The Ragman's Son. There are actually points in that autobiographical account by Kirk Douglas where Kirk Douglas addresses Izzy, and Izzy addresses Kirk Douglas.
Right, right.
As though they're having a dialogue, and I think that's questions of identity were part. I think I read in the student newspaper, and he was a good writer. You know, some people question, well, how much editorial help or even ghostwriting did he have in his books? And I'm sure he had some, of course, but he was a good writer. I'm sure Mrs. Livingston, Louise Livingston, his high school English teacher, helped him with some of his youthful writing. But if you read the high school newspaper, he was a good writer. And one of the articles really kind of intrigued me, and it specifically dealt with identity and how you immerse yourself in a role, in a play, and the company becomes something special, a family, a community, and you become for that period of time, and then the kind of the sadness, you know, when the the final performance of that play and the curtain falls.
What do you want to learn about Kirk Douglas now?
I think that to see the relationship between some of the films and his past, I believe that the child writes the script for the adult. And I think coming to terms with Amsterdam and all that represented, fathers and sons, families, personal identities, you know, it is one man show done at 92. There's a point where Kirk Douglas says, I don't think I can ever forgive my father. And Michael Douglas, who was in the audience, rose and said, if you forgive him, I will forgive you. And I think that I'd like to push further on that and look for clues in some of what, you know, was Kirk Douglas's artistic output, his films, to see if there is, to push further on that.
But do we have an answer? I mean, I wonder if Michael Douglas ever did forgive his father, or what did he forgive his father for?
Well, his parents, Michael's parents, Kirk Douglas's first wife, and he were divorced. She was came from an upper class British Caribbean family, and he very quickly, you know, actually, I can explain it well. That during the one man show, he commented on his first marriage, and all of a sudden there was a clip of his first wife saying, he has had many close relations with his leading ladies. And when that happens, that's no longer a marriage. So one, I think children, oftentimes young children, never forgive a divorce. It was the former wife, the first wife, who raised Michael and Michael's brother, Joel. And Kirk did not, he later grew into being a very good father. He and Michael, as adults, had a wonderful, wonderful relationship. But talk about bills, that the first wife married a man who was named Bill, and he was very good with Michael and Michael's brother, Joel. I think it was the divorce and absenteeism, and that I think Michael probably blamed his father for the divorce, his adulteries.
Bill Simons, the latest article about the Yearsight of Izzy Demski is in what publication?
It's in The Reporter, which is published by the Jewish Federation of Broome County, New York.
And Bill Simons is an emeritus professor of history at the State University of New York, and also co-head of an organization that studies baseball history. We, of course, depend on your contributions to keep the Historians Podcast going. You can find our GoFundMe page by going through our website. We have a blue button. Hit the blue button, then you go to the GoFundMe, and you can make a donation using your credit card. Or you could write out a check to Bob Cudmore, send to 125 Horseman Drive, Scotia, New York, 12302. The Historians Podcast is produced by Dave Green, and I'm Bob Cudmore.